Hello and welcome to High Fidelity. You're on 100.5 WOW FM. My name is Shannon and thank you for joining me for another Thursday. And in a few minutes, I'm going to be joined by Paul. Now, Paul is from The Profiteers, Dave's Video Graveyard, and I had the Peanut Podcast. And Paul is coming in to have a bit of a chat about the 25th anniversary of the record-breaking Versus album from Pearl Jam. Oh, Paul's just come in as well.
Hey, man, how you doing?
I am doing very, very well.
I was here the whole time we talked about.
Yes, you're in that relaxing in the green room with the several people that hang around in the WOW Film studios all the time.
Thanks for the brown M&Ms.
Now, Paul, with Profiteers, a bit of that punk edge that I guess as we're getting into the Versus special that Eddie Vedder kind of came from. And have they, would you say Pearl Jam has a bit of an influence on your playing in The Profiteers?
Probably not. Well, it's probably got across the board. Like, I'm a bass player first and foremost. So, Jeff Ament was one of my first real inspirations. And if you listen to him, like, sometimes he's not doing that much. Mm-hmm. But he is the most, one of the most solid bass players you'll ever hear. Like, and now that him and Matt Cameron are in the band together, they've got a groove that just is just amazing. You know, he's not as flashy as, say, Flea from that horrible band. But, or like, you know, Matt Freeman from Rancid, who I really love, who's another big influencer thing. But I started playing, I stopped playing with a pick a while ago, and Jeff Ament's more playing with his fingers and stuff. So I think he does influence Profiteers a lot more because I use a lot of his grooves and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'd say that he does that influence, yeah.
And listening to Profiteers, there's kind of that real punk ethos to it.
Yep.
And I was talking to your co-host Dave from Dave's Video Graveyard, and we were both kind of discussing, it's almost a little bit surprising. I felt like I would almost be a person that would need to hide the fact that I was into Pearl Jam from you, that maybe you'd hear that someone was into Pearl Jam and you'd look at me the way I look at people who say they're into Bon Jovi.
No, see, like, I was going to sort of talk about this too. Like, I mean, Pearl Jam's just one of those ones that a lot of people love them. I've got, like, a lot of skeletons in my closet of stuff I love. So, and I did routine, like, I used to wear my Pearl Jam t-shirt on stage at punk shows and cop it. And it's just like, if you're really, truly punk, when you just sort of stay true to who you are, there's an influence of those songs. Any punk song I ever wrote, if, like, I used to be in a band called Standard Union, like, I can say for sure that two of the songs in particular were written after jamming on Pearl Jam songs and stuff like that. So, yeah.
And Pearl Jam, they tend to be a little bit polarizing. There's people that just absolutely hate them, and there's people that absolutely love them.
Yeah, and look, I've been, like, a bit of a tragic for a while and, like, a bit of a Pearl Jam nerd, but, like, I will say, and, like, I know one of the biggest Pearl Jam fans that I've ever met is listening, and he might not agree with me, but I think Pearl Jam fans are the best and worst fans of a band ever. Like, there's a lot of gatekeeping. Mm-hmm. So if you go into a Pearl Jam, like, well, I went with my brother to the 2003 tour, and we walked out, and he's like, the worst thing about a Pearl Jam concert is Pearl Jam fans, because they can be really polarizing too. Like, you know, I've seen them 36 times, I've seen them like 102 times, I've seen them four. They're not the most welcoming. Some of them are. Mm-hmm. Some of them are the best people I know, but they don't make it easy for people on the outside to like him. So, yeah.
And Pearl Jam, they never seem to get that reverence that, say, Nirvana has these days, where after the same amount of time, Nirvana, I guess they have lost Kurt, which tends to give people a bit of rose-coloured glasses when they look back. But Pearl Jam doesn't... Well, I guess one of the nice things for Pearl Jam is they haven't become a T-shirt brand that millennials are wearing.
No. And, like, the thing, and, like, they've kept consistently making good albums. I mean, regardless of what you think about their post, say, like, from Binaural onwards, they've all got strong songs in them. Like, I think that Riot Act's right up there. But it was probably my second favourite Pearl Jam album. Riot Act is an amazing album.
I love Backspacer.
Backspacer is excellent.
That's amazing. I'd kind of taken a bit of a leave from Pearl Jam after about Yield.
Yep.
And still listened to them, but not avidly. Didn't buy everything.
Yeah.
And then picked up Backspacer when it was cheap and just went, oh, Jesus, all of their new stuff is good.
If they had released Backspacer when, like, for Binaural, they would have kept that momentum going way. But Binaural really split the crowd up, and, like, and I like that album too because it was just like, this is what we want to do right now.
With Versus, Pearl Jam were kind of in that position where sort of, what, they'd been together for about 3 months and then put 10 together.
Yep.
10 went for a little while under the radar and then just absolutely blew up.
Yeah.
And they copped a bit of flack for it. They were kind of a bit stuck in that it became successful, that people judged them for the success.
The term sellout started being thrown around, especially in a scene like Seattle, where like there were so many people who they were all sort of friends and they were sort of helped each other out, but then like they would turn their back. It's kind of like the Adelaide scene in a way. Like there's that tall poppy sort of thing. Yeah. Where it's like, well, you know, you can just go then.
Well,
you
know, they
could be successful.
Nirvana were openly dissing them in plenty of interviews, and the media loved to jump onto that Nirvana sort of Pearl Jam clash.
Which is weird because, like, I mean, if you read, like, any things with Kurt, like he did not interview well. Like, he was taking the piss a lot.
Yeah, I think it's funny that I think the Foo Fighters have become the band that Nirvana made fun of Pearl Jam for being.
Yeah.
The radio-friendly, stadium-playing, easy-listening type rock.
Yeah, I find them, like, me and a couple of guys in Profiteers have, like, a constant sort of battle about Foo Fighters, because Foo Fighters are, like, they got great songs. And then you listen to the lyrics, and Dave has openly said that he writes the lyrics after the music, and it shows. I don't see myself ever having the reverence for him that I would have for Pearl Jam, because the lyrics are sort of what make Pearl Jam special. Like, Foo Fighters, they are a great stadium rock band, but I don't see them resonating as much as
So Pearl Jam were kind of in that position where they'd had this massive album, and everyone was wondering, what's next? Are they going to do 10 part 2 or are they going to go in a completely different angle? And they kind of, it was almost a thing for bands at the time to almost want to lose fans. Nirvana did it with In Utero.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we want to distance ourselves from some of the college bros that are showing up at our shows.
Yeah.
Pearl Jam, I think, were along the same line.
And you can see it because this album spans a lot of different styles. Like, I mean, can you imagine, like, you know, a song like WMA? A 6-minute sort of almost tribal sort of song, and it's just one of my favorite songs ever by them. I think it was great, and they sometimes tag it on the end of Daughter Alive, and it's even better. It's just got a lot of different styles, and like there's only one song on this album, and when we get to El Saver, that I don't like, and I don't know why I don't like it. It's just I think the weak point of the album, but like it's a consistently good, it's one of my favorite albums of all time, of not just Pearl Jam, of all time.
It'd be interesting to see if your less liked song is the same as mine.
Okay, cool.
So the kids that were all expecting 10 part 2,
yep,
got the CD home, put it on, and they were hit with Go.
Yes.
Which is a pretty impressive start. Pearl Jam, they always start off so well. I think they structure their albums really well.
This song is such a punch to the face. So I saw them in 98 at Thurban and Oval, and they started, I think, their encore with this. And you know when you want to hear certain songs live, and like it's the only time I've ever seen them play it live, and it's just a slap to the face, and it's just so good. It's just it's the best way to open an album. So,
well, let's get into it. This is Go, the very first track from Pearl Jam's Versus album, which turns 25 this year.
So good.
Yes. And it came from Dave A.
Yeah.
the drummer came up with the riff that starts the album.
Yeah, that, and like knowing about Dave Abrazeats and not liking him just makes me feel weird about that song now. it's just such a great opener. I've read about like Mike McCready's, like, he tries to sort of nail that solo, like he got it like in two takes, because you can hear him throwing his guitar at the end of it. You can hear Dave throwing his sticks at the end of
he couldn't get
the take right, because they said we should get, like, they recorded it in this it was in California, I think.
Super fancy studio,
and Eddie did not like it. He was sleeping in his car.
No, I think they had Dolly Parton recorded there, and a couple of other bands, and I think there's a story that some of the band were turning up early in robes from waking up and coming into the studio, and you don't see that going well with Eddie.
No, and I think they were like doing softball before they started and stuff like that, and then like he went down and basically slept in his car in the city because he's like, I can't get any inspiration here. And like, look, and it sounds like a lot of this, like when I read this stuff 10-15 years ago, you're like, yeah, then now it sounds a bit hokey, but like he's like a 23-year-old dude, like, you know, like he didn't know what he was dealing with, and like half the time he didn't really want to do interviews, so a lot of that he does come off sometimes is a bit sort of obnoxious or something, but I'm like, I think he just didn't know what he was saying most of the time. So.
And everyone expected words of wisdom from him any time he opened his mouth.
Because
Eddie does seem to be a funny guy when you see him in certain things.
It's like what me and Dave were talking about Harrison Ford on the set of Last Crusade. Like, my new favourite Harrison Ford is off-camera Harrison Ford, because he's a hilarious man. And Eddie's hilarious too. Like, when you see, there's a special feature on the Pearl Jam 20, and he's just telling stories to Cameron Crowe, like in his house, his weird house with a fireman's pole. And it's like, he's a funny dude.
Yeah.
Like,
well, yeah. He's in that little clip in Portlandia with the Eddie Vedder tattoo, just yes. making fun of himself, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was one of my favorite. Yeah.
That's genius. And yeah. You're watching it going, oh, they're getting stuck into him. And then when he appears at the end, you go, that's so good. He's in on the joke.
Is it? Is he an Arnie DeFranco?
Arnie DeFranco tattoo, yeah. Yeah. So, and I read an interview. Well, there was an interview where they talk about Eddie told a couple of band members years after that Go is about his truck.
It is, yeah. Yeah, that's like, I was reading a few, like, so you look at the songmeanings.com or whatever, and it's like, yeah, everyone's like in agreement it's about his truck.
But it sounds deep and meaningful. It's about relationships. And he said, my truck breaks down.
Yeah, a lot.
And then they follow Go up with Animal, which is that 1-2 punch that I think they kind of mirror on Vitalogy straight after.
Animal used to be my favorite song to play on guitar because I couldn't play a lot of Pearl Jam songs on guitar because they're obviously very intricate, but like this is one of the ones I could play quite well, and it was just fun to play. It's even fun on bass. And I remember the first time I saw this, I was a big film clip watcher. Mm-hmm. So there was a clip of them playing this at the MTV Music Awards of 93. They did this, and then after that, Neil Young came on and they did a Rocking in the Free World.
Yep.
And Eddie doesn't want to be there. He hates it. And you just tell it, and it's like the most ferocious version of this song. And I think Rage used to play it as like the clip for this song, the official clip sort of thing, but it wasn't. But
yeah, because there were no clips.
There were no clips up until I think Evolution was the next one.
Yeah, I think that was one of the protests that they were unhappy about, how Jeremy was misinterpreted.
Have you seen the alternative cut to Jeremy?
No.
It's quite interesting. If you find it, it's quite interesting, way they wanted to go. But yeah, Animal is great. And there's been talks about this, like, you know, what the meaning behind this song is, and it's like, could it be the press and the band against Eddie, or is it, it's also been a song about rape or an abuse. I think it's put in the same category as, like, Why Go?
Yep.
That sort of same story that sort of keeps running through with those songs sort of things.
And that opening line of Five Against One was going to be the title of the album?
Yeah. And then out of all my research, I couldn't really sort of find out who coined the term verses.
Like, I think I was having a look and they said it was last minute. It was so last minute that certain cassette pressings still have Five Against One. And then I think they went for the verses more as to make it almost a bit clearer that it's together, they're fighting against it.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people thought, like, oh, yeah, it was them against Eddie sort of thing. And that didn't happen until, like, No Code days. So. Yeah.
The other story I heard that I really liked about Animal was they said that there was a record exec that was talking to Eddie about lifting the vocals and making them clearer for this song.
Yeah.
And he sat him down and said, well, this is what the lyrics are about. And they went, nah, probably keep them hidden then.
Cool.
You can't really imagine them as a band sitting down and taking advice from record executives either.
I've heard that a lot of stuff is done in-house, like the artwork and stuff done by Jeff. Like, he did all the photos and stuff, like the photo of the sheep on the front cover. And because it's such an iconic front cover. And it never really sort of crossed my mind until, like, sort of recently. I was like, it's kind of a weird front cover for the second album of, like, a huge band. Like,
and there was a slightly different photo of the same goat sheep for the vinyl.
Yeah. It's got the insert that came with, because I had the cassette tape, not the Five Against One cassette tape, unfortunately, but I had the cassette tape of Versus, and like it had the, you know, Eddie's clown mask that he had? Yeah, that's on the straw and all that stuff. It's kind of really sort of macabre photo shoot they did.
Yeah.
And I remember in the liner notes, like, there wasn't really any photos of them either. Yep. Like, the first few albums, actually, there wasn't. Because even in Vitalogy, there's not really a clear photo of them, I don't think. So they did everything their way, which is a really good way to be, especially at that time.
I think anything could have been a better cover than the cover of 10 with that cheesy high fives. That's not good. That is not good.
I hated 10's packaging because the poster, I can never refold it the way it's supposed to go. So it was never actually the high five. I think it was like the back of Stone's head that I've got on the front cover of mine. So.
And Animals, that had around for a while, I think. Stone had the music from the Mookie Blaylock days.
Well, that riff is very much like, I've started to, like, sort of after you play in bands, you can start to see how songwriters go. Like, that riff is very alive, even flowy. Mm-hmm. Like, it's got, like, it's basically on the A string, it's basically just a very Stone riff.
Yep.
So, that doesn't surprise me to be back from then, so. Yeah.
We better get into it because we're 25 minutes in and about to start the second song. So, this is Animal off of Versus. You're on High Fidelity. This is 100.5 WOW FM. And that is Daughter Fading Out there, the third track, and probably the biggest single. That would have been the biggest single off the album.
Yeah, I mean, it's still one of their biggest singles. I remember going to see them, and like I heard they didn't play it, and someone behind me was like, oh, they didn't even play Daughter. I'm like, listen to Triple M for a week. Yeah.
And that's the thing, going to see Pearl Jam live, you probably may not hear your favourite song this time around, no. But you'll hear three songs you just haven't heard before.
And when I was watching Pearl Jam 20, I remember because, like, one, I should say, every time I watch that doco, it makes me sort of get annoyed by Stone like that a little bit more. He's such a dick.
Do you know what? I watched, just in the lead up to this, I watched the induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You can just see the contempt in his eyes when Eddie speaks. They invite Eddie up and he just arms are crossed. He just gets this look on his face and you can almost see the eye rolls whenever Eddie gets a cheer.
He's just, yeah, he's a complicated man, Stone. But yeah, there's a bit on that where like they're demoing Daughter and it's called Brother.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just an early sort of cut and, you know, all of the sort of beats are there. And it's, but I remember, like, also live with Daughter, they always still put, like, a little sort of bit on the end of it. For a while, it was Another Brick in the Wall by Pink Floyd, and they've done WMA and a few other things. And it's just a song, also on the, one of the most famous ones is on the touring band. It's, It's Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the best little tag-ons they do. So, but yeah, going to see him live, it's always a mixed bag. And that's why I'll go see him over and over again, because like it will be a different show every night.
I always think Daughter, like the lyrics are pretty deep, and you think your average commercial radio station listener's not really delving too deep into it.
Yeah, yeah. And then like, and the cynical side of me does sort of see people sort of sing along to it, and you know that they're like, Pearl Jam's got that thing of being able to write a song that you can sing along to, and like it's just a really rocking song and you can sing along to it. They have no sort of thought about what the lyrics are. Mm. But then like when you find out what the lyrics are, it's, oh, this is really deep. It's not just a stadium song. Yeah, it's really, really good.
Well, like the next song, Glorified G, which is, I think it's amazing to have a diss track that the person you're dissing has to play on the track that you've got. That's amazing.
Gotta go. In fact, I got to.
Yeah.
This is all about Dave Abruzzese. I'm probably spelling his, saying his name wrong, but that's fine. So he mentioned to Jeff that he had a gun. In fact, he's got two. And he seems like someone who's just not socially aware of what he's saying. I remember a Rolling Stone article that was written about Verses at the time. You might have read it. And in the opening paragraph, I think even Cameron Code wrote it. They say, oh, Dave's like, oh, is Daughter going to be the first single? And apparently the band turned around and just completely sort of either shunned him or like gave him sort of death glares. I'm like, they wrote that in an international publication. It's like, this guy, just one of these things does not belong.
Right, and it sounds like he basically knew that a couple of the people in the band just hated him and he had no time for it. And I kind of like the balls on the guy because we don't do interviews. We're serious. We're not living the rock star life. And he's doing drum magazine interviews. Oh, he's buying the fast cars. He's going, I'm an international rock star. I'm going to live like one.
He's basically saying, like, I know that my time in this band is not going to be forever. Yeah. So I'm going to make it as long as I can. So.
And they snubbed him at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which
as they should.
He plays on some pretty iconic albums for him. And
And my big thing too is, and I'm not a drummer, I'm not a gear dude, but like, man, that dude had a lot of cymbals.
And he can play though.
He could play, yeah, but like there was that the MTV Unplugged, me and my friends were like, go, there's not even names as half those cymbals he's got.
I still think though, probably this album has what I think is the best drumming on any Pearl Jam album. Even with you got your Matt Cameron, you got everyone else, but Dave just smashes everything, but it's so complex. Some of the stuff he's playing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when we get to WMA, like that drum beat is, and like, not so much just the intricacy, but just like the constant, like he's like that for the entire 6 minutes. It's like it's really, really good. So as much as it pains me to say it, the drumming is really good.
Yeah. Now, before we get into this, where did you get this album when it first came out, or was it one you discovered later?
So my brother got it and played it ad nauseum too, and the wall was very thin in between us, so I heard all this. He had a huge, I'm talking like maybe wall-sized poster of Verses that I then got, and then it's just, I mean, must have fallen apart over the years. So I got through that, and then I sort of got it from him. He made me a tape because I was, so what was that, 93? I was like, what, 10 or 12? Oh, 10 or 11. He didn't want my parents knowing that he gave me an album with swear words. So he gave me verses without Blood or Leash.
Right.
So for the first, up until about 94, 95, I didn't think that Blood or Leash, I'd never heard Leash before. And then like when I heard Leash, I'm like, why didn't you put this on the album? And then I was like, oh, that's right, because it had swear words all the way through. So that's how I got it. How did you buy this the first sort of week it came out?
I was at uni at the time, so I'm much, much older. And I remember on the day going into Rundle Mall, I'm pretty sure it was the Virgin Megastore.
Virgin Megastore.
Going in and buying this and taking it home, going, because I didn't have a CD player in the car.
Yeah.
And putting it on and just going, all right, I'm ready for this. What's it going to be? And was pretty pumped with it.
Yeah, look, I mean, then, because I call this, I was writing about like what I was going to say tonight, this kind of came in my second stage of music. So you have your first stage, which is the music that your parents listen to and you kind of just inherit. So there's a lot of Billy Joel, Elton John, Beatles. My dad was an Elvis. I was a Beatles fan, not an Elvis fan. The second stage is like this sort of stuff, just getting into adolescence. Then I went to my punk stage sort of thing. So this is like my second stage. I'm like, this is finally something that's mine.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really cool. Like, it's, you don't sort of understand the significance of it until you sort of look back and it's, yeah, this is the first album. Like, the first single I ever bought was Spin the Black Circle.
Yep.
And then Vitology I bought as well.
Do you think one of the nice things with that Nirvana, Pearl Jam, the whole grunge that hit was, I was at that perfect age where it was mine.
Yeah.
And my parents didn't really get it. And other people didn't really get it. And it just seemed my generation and kids my age just went, this is for us.
Yeah.
I think that's something that's kind of missing from a lot of mainstream stuff now. A lot of kids are listening to exactly the same music that their parents and sometimes their grandparents are listening to at the moment.
And also a lot, I think that's a lot to do with the parents too. Like, I mean, these, like, back in those days, like, I think those days, look at me, listen to me.
Well, it was quarter of a century.
Yeah. Oh, don't tell me that. My parents weren't the sort of the same. Like, they didn't really sort of care what I listened to. It's, you know, you'll find your own thing. These days, I see a lot of parents kind of gearing their kids to listen to the things that they want them to listen to, and not giving them the chance to sort of find that. And then finding, being upset when their kids pick something completely different. Like, oh, I wanted them to listen to the Cramps, but they like the Frozen soundtrack. It's like, yeah, because the Frozen soundtrack's something good that they want to listen to.
Yeah,
I think a lot of it's these days, the parents are more sort of closer with the kids and they sort of want to sort of share it. And that's great they want to share it. So too, but like, you know, cut the cord sometimes. It's like, you know, find out what you want to. My first kid doesn't like the music that I'm into at all. Mm-hmm. He, like, if he hears like pop banger song on the radio, he loves that stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas my second kid, he's more into ska and lots of them punk and lots of stuff. Like, he likes that stuff. So it's just each kid's different. So.
Well, Zach, who picks a song every week on my show, he is the kid that's either walking through the school ground at recess time singing the soundtrack to The Sound of Music, and then cutting straight into Smoko by The Chats. So he's kind of got both of my wife and my taste in music.
Yeah, and that's cool. It's just, and then from that, he'll sort of find where he wants to go from there, and that's the sort of thing. I'm glad my dad wasn't like sort of too, you're not going to listen to this music. He wasn't that happy when I was getting into punk. I think you do get, like, all kids get an attitude with them when they see punk. And I think he's more like saying, like, look, this is great music, but this is not for you. You're not an anarchist. You're very much a conformist. So just be true to yourself.
All right, let's get into Glorified G, because we're on to the fourth track and we're nearly into the second hour. We're getting close. So this is Glorified G off of Versus. So, Paulie, tell us about Dissident.
this is probably my least favourite song on the album, and I don't even know why. I was telling you off air. Around this time they released, do you remember the Pearl Jam Unauthorized used to get from Cunningham's Warehouse?
Yeah, I've got a stack of those.
Yeah. So, like, they're actually worth quite a lot of money these days.
Oh, I'll have to dig them out.
Yeah. I sold a couple of them back in the day for, like, way more than what they're worth.
I remember going to Rundle Mall and I think CC Records, when they were, like, declared actually not legal anymore, they just had them all for a dollar. So I just went in and bought, like, about 15, 16 of them.
Because there was their notorious concert for the singles release where they're all drunk. I have the recording of that.
All right.
And it's like, you know, it really is. And they're decent copies of them too. But, Dissident was on there. And for some reason, like, every time I was listening to it, especially the live version, it just seemed to drag a bit. And, I know. Just, like, I think on an album this strong, it is the weakest song. It's the one I tend to skip the most. But,
well, I was saying to you too, it's the most Eddie Vedder Eddie Vedder vocals. It's the one that other people like. People Eddie use Vedder's that to kind of make friends. And that's the thing. I think possibly one of the things people have as a problem with Pearl Jam is they inspired some very terrible bands.
Yeah.
You've got sort of your Nickelback and your Creed that are basically going, well, we're going to sing like Eddie Vedder. And instead of going against what the fans wanted like Pearl Jam would, these guys just went straight down the track of what will get us played on the radio.
And they basically went the track that Pearl Jam purposely veered off of. And it's like, you know, and it's not often you have a living example of what could have been.
Yeah, that's true.
But this leads us right into what I can imagine at the time was one of the more experimental tracks in the album. Like, I mean, it's WNA, isn't it?
Yeah.
This, I mean, and like the subject matter, this is probably the first time he like got a clear cut sort of insight into like the more socio-political stuff of that Eddie was into, like in his lyrics sort of thing, like white male American.
Yeah, well, the story behind this song is fantastic.
Yeah.
I think with Eddie sleeping in his car, he was saying he hadn't showered, he smelt, his clothes were terrible. He said he looked just like he was living on the street.
Yeah.
And walking down the street, and there was an African American guy. He said was well dressed, was well presented, and two police came along, and he was expecting them to go straight to him and say, "What are you doing here?" And said that he just watched them go straight to the black guy and hassle him and get stuck into him. And Eddie, I think the story was he basically went straight back to the studio, wrote this, and off it went.
Yeah, and it's just, I think the first time they sort of really dabbled around with dubbing his vocals over his own vocals. Mm-hmm. Like he's doing a lot of the background vocals of this because you can hear it, and then like he's doing also the lead. The best part, one of my favorite parts of any Pearl Jam song ever is Jesus Greets Me, Looks Just Like Me.
And
there's that little guitar chord it picks, and every time I hear it, I'm like, oh, it's awesome.
Well, the good news is after this song was released, that was it. It solved the problem of police racism in America.
That's exactly
it's
right.
It's no longer an issue anymore, so well done, Pearl Jam.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been any other incident of that.
The police forces in America listened to it and went, okay, we'll stop now.
Yeah.
It's good news. All right, let's listen to WMA.
So
this is High Fidelity. I'm joined by Paul from Dave's Video Graveyard and Profiteers, and I had the peanut podcast and everything else, and we're going through Pearl Jam's 25th anniversary of the Versus album.
This is this song here, so Blood. One of those ones is just I didn't know it was actually on the album until I actually got the for a while there, I think it was one that they didn't play live a lot. So when you did see it, like, or when you did hear it live, it was very special, and I love the breakdown of it, the tear it in two. Is it like it's yeah.
My favourite part is when Eddie refers to himself in the third person Elmo style.
Yeah.
that's great. But it's probably one of the most personal songs I think Eddie's written at the time, especially. Because it's definitely about Eddie.
Yeah.
And you can just hear the anger he has for the media and for everybody else with this.
All credit to him. Like, when you do hear recent versions, like 2015 onwards, like, you know, around this time, like, it's still got that same ferocity. Like, it's, and like, his voice must be like taking a toll, like, at this stage, but he can still belt this one out. And
I think one of the inspirations for the song was seeing that army jacket he used to wear and seeing a knockoff version of it for a huge price in some fashion store.
And then, when you go into Vitology, like, being corduroy is, like, you know, all about that sort of thing too, like the corduroy jacket and all that. So yeah, definitely, without further ado, like,
and pretty intense ending to this one as well.
Yeah.
So this is Blood. You're on 100.5 Wow FM. Paul's joining me for a 25th anniversary special for Pearl Jam's Versus. That was Blood. Now, Paulie, the next one is probably, I'd have to say, maybe my favourite song on the album.
Probably one of my favourite songs ever, and not just Pearl Jam. This also started the rise of Eddie Vedder's more songwriting by Eddie Vedder. Like, he started playing guitar on this album.
Yeah, is this the first one he played guitar on, recorded?
Yeah, I think so. And we should also reference the fact that Better Man was actually part of these sessions.
Yes, yeah. That's where it amazes me. You've got a song like Rats, which I'm not a huge fan of, and they had The Whipping and Better Man there in the can ready to go.
Yeah. So they Brenda and Brian, the producer, ran in when they were
playing better, man. He's like, this is a hit, this is awesome. And then that scared them off to say, like, nah, we don't want that. There is, so that the one I keep referring back to, like that Fox Theatre Atlanta bootleg, you can hear, so they, I think they do Whipping third song in, and they do Better Man as well. I know that Not For You was around that time too. I reckon that was in there as well. They had all the, they played Not For You on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
So they went on Saturday Night Live, they played Rearview Mirror, they played Daughter, and then they played Not For You, which they hadn't even released on Vitology yet, I don't think. So, yeah.
Was that when First Dave was still playing in the Saturday Night Live band?
Yes. It was 3 days after Kurt died.
Right.
So, because he's got like a K on his T-shirt, and they're one of the only bands that ever got allowed to play three songs on Saturday Night Live. Yeah. So
I have very strong feelings about this song as well, because this was one of my few forays into actually being in a band.
Yep.
A mate and I grew up, he played drums, and basically I got guitar so that he would have someone to play drums with, and we would just play Nirvana and Pearl Jam over and over and over again. And then he was a really good drummer, and I was a very ordinary guitarist, and he joined up with a couple of older kids in this band, and I got dragged along as, you know, we need a second guitarist, we're going to be a four piece, do you want to come along? So I came along, and the lead singer was very much into Green Day, which kind of had me going, yeah, I don't know. And so I had this list of songs that I needed to play, and I said, all right, well, why not play this one, Rearview Mirror, because this song is just so good.
Yep.
And we played it twice the first time I was there, and we all had a ball. It was just so good. It's like, how good is this song? And it was like, right, this should be a song we start off with. And the lead singer, who very much was going to be the greatest rock star in the world, went, no, I don't think people want to hear it. And I was like, but it's fun to play. And he was more, no, if people don't want to hear it, we're not going to play it. We'll only play the ones. And that was where I don't know about this then.
Which subway is he mopping these days?
I think he's in a bank, actually. I think he works as a bank teller, so he made the right decision.
I think it's just one of the best examples of songwriting, and especially Pearl Jam songwriting. The lyrics are amazing. It goes through a few different, like, in regards to the songwriting, it actually has a few different tempos and changes in this song that you haven't really heard in much in Pearl Jam songs before this. Eddie Vedder's songwriting came through really well.
And that Rearview Mirror scream at the end.
Yeah.
Chills.
And I think I've seen this like a couple of times, and it's one of those ones I always want to hear live. It's just, yeah.
It is so good. And as we were both mentioning, the Dave throwing the sticks that you can hear hitting the wall and bouncing on the floor at the end.
Yeah, that's apparently a great touch. He just couldn't get the tempo or something right. So, yeah, definitely let's listen to it.
Now, the next song, you were saying Dissident's probably your least favourite on the album. This one's mine. I think this is the Bugs of Vitalogy.
Oh, how dare you? How very dare you?
Do you know the main problem I have with it?
What?
One, it is a little bit pretentious, going, you know what, animals and rats are way better than people. But everything he says about rats, they actually do. If you listen to it, everything he says that rats don't do, they do.
It's not really ironic. Alanis Morissette. No, it's not really
but
ironic.
If you listen to it, they don't scurry when something bigger comes their way. Yes, they do. All of it.
I like the fact that, like, he really hits the Olajuwon's feet, but like it's more a reference to the basketball player at the time, because there's basketball references all the way through, like their lyrics and stuff like that. The reason I love this song so much is that, one, I like a lot of their songs that they don't play live a lot, and this one I've never seen it live. Was at the concert where everyone had a picture of a rat and he still refused to play it live.
I think Eddie agrees with me that it's the weakest track on the album.
I like it because it's got a really good bass line that when I learned it, I was just like, it was this, and there's a track on An Outcome of the Walls called Journey to the End of East Bay, and when I learned those two songs, I'm like, I'm a bass player.
All right, well, let's listen to Rats, and I guarantee pretty much everything that Eddie says rats don't do, you could find an example of rats doing it. So you're on Wow FM Community Radio in Semaphore. Now, next is another one of my favorite Pearl Jam songs.
I think this is one of their ultimate live songs. That bit where he says hello, and they usually hit the house lights, and it's just, I went and saw they played they just released a new DVD called Let's Play Two, which is about their shows at Wrigley Field. Elderly Woman was on that, and like when I was in the cinema watching it, and the hello came up.
Yeah.
Oh my lord! Yeah. Like I say, and you feel like you were there, sort of thing. So
I found out and went and had a look that they got in trouble for the photo in the original version of the liner notes. There's a picture of an elderly woman who didn't give them permission. And there's a photo that was replaced, and it has, you can tell the difference because there's a new and improved elderly woman written underneath. So I ran out to the shed, found my copy, and I've got the one of the original lady.
Nice.
So I was pretty happy about that. I think that's what happens when you buy it on the release day.
So it's really funny that like those things that you think they would have double checked.
And the other thing I loved about this song was the liner notes had the chords. And as like a teenage kid trying to learn guitar, that was phenomenal to go, oh, I can play this straight away.
And this like, and it's really one of those ones that I think is another Eddie song, because he does seem to like to sort of noodle around in that D chord, sort of C, G sort of thing. And when you start, strumming this, I'm like, I can play Elderly Woman. That's awesome.
And the lyrics to this are amazing too. Coming from Victor Harbour, I kind of went through my early 20s kind of measuring people's success, friends' success, based on how far they got from Victor Harbour. And you listen to a song like this and it just really resonates about that person that's never really gone anywhere, and seeing something and seeing someone. And yeah, that, like you said, that line of I just want to scream hello.
Yeah.
You can just feel the sort of emotion in it.
I love it, yeah. So, definitely one of my favourite. Oh, they're sort of the lower fire ones, like but the thing is, like, it starts off very sort of acoustic-y and all that stuff, but it really builds to a huge thing. So, yeah, definitely let's listen.
There we go. And they fade out over the fade away lyrics. There you go. A little bit meta.
Yeah.
So we're getting close to the end of the album. Couple to go. The next one is an absolute belter.
This one, I think, I've always wanted to see this live. It just seems like something that you'd want to yell out. And I still do. Like, if I'm listening to this on headphones on a bus or something I'll still scream out to drop the leash.
Yeah, well, the opening lyrics are almost a perfect opening song for a concert.
Yeah. A very different song for the album. Like, this is probably the more even sort of punky, really sort of rocky ones of the album. And it's, again, I didn't know I was on there until I got the right film. It sometimes even seems like a little bit like it could have been a B-side.
Yep.
And I'm glad it wasn't. But yeah, it's a banger. And
it's just one that I think shows the really cool thing about the album that I think Brendan O'Brien brought in, was they would record one song at a time. They wouldn't go on to the next song
until
the one before was finished, which is a really different way to record an album for a band of this size. For a new band emerging that's only got a little bit of studio time, that might be something. But for someone selling as many albums as Pearl Jam at the time, to do it that way is really cool.
And that's the thing. And like, and you can kind of tell, like, to do it that way, because you're not, and I think I've read people, like one of the band members say, like, you're not thinking about, oh, I've still got to do this for that song sort of thing. Like, that song is done and dusted, and like, we're on to the next one. This is our focus. I mean, that would be an enjoyable way to record.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is it keeps the band together. It's not like, well, we've recorded everything and get this guy in to do his bits. You can't move on until everyone else has moved on, which is a good way to keep everything playing at the same time.
Definitely, yeah.
So let's get into it. And there is a bit of fruity language in this one, according to your brother.
Yes.
So this is Leash. You're on Community Radio in Semaphore. This is 100.5 WOW FM.
That was, So I was saying off air, actually, I think that was one of the holdovers from 10, because I'm pretty sure they played it on a couple of those, again, the unauthorized ones.
There's a few songs that they had around for quite a while, even songs from the next album. Like we were saying, Better Man was one Eddie had kicking around well before Pearl Jam.
And then, like, I think after that, though, because, like, then from No Code onwards, it was more sort of played tight to the chest. They didn't sort of like sort of tease out songs. They were like, nah, this is our writing and this is our album, and then we'll tour that album sort of thing.
Well, so, I always think they must have a real depth of songs, because if you can have songs like Yellow Ledbetter and State of Love and Trust and not put them on any of your albums, you must have some good songs in
the
bag.
That's the thing, yeah. Like, I mean, and we should talk about the B-sides, because I'm not sure we're going to get to them tonight, but one of my favourites B-sides to this album and any album is Alone. Mm-hmm. I reckon Alone is... and that's very much a 10-era song as well. But it was on the Go single, one of the singles that I grabbed off my brother, and Go, that, and Early Woman.
Yeah.
And Alone's just one of my favourite ever Pearl Jam songs. Again, never heard it live, probably never will hear it live. And they also, I think Hold On, Crazy Mary was in these sessions, and then also Yellow Leadbetter. So,
and some of the instruments they recorded for The Real Thing with Cypress Hill as well, which name checks Pearl Jam too, but that's it's a very unusual mix. I think for a soundtrack of metal or rock bands playing with some R&B and rap artists, it's a strange one.
It's strange, yeah. Like, it's... There's a few little partnerships they had over the years. Just like, wow.
Yeah, there was the joint Christmas single with REM and a couple of different things. Well, I guess in terms of playing with other artists, the final track of the album is kind of the guest artist song whenever they play it live.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I've seen the one that everyone knows is the version with Ben Harper.
Yes.
But there's Kelly Slater on there. There's, I think, anyone who goes, oh, I'd like to come on stage and sing with you, they go, well, all right, we'll give you Indifference.
Yeah. This song, I love the bass line of this song is so simple but so effective. Like this, a lot of different Pearl Jam songs, if you want to know the genius of Jeff Ament to just have, like, it's just two notes for most of it,
mm-hmm.
But he plays them solidly, he plays them well, just keeps it the entire song, and I love it. This is another song that, like, I'll sing along to wherever I am.
Oh yes. Well, I had Fergus Maximus on a while back, he played a Neil Finn song, and I said something about Neil Finn that I think fits with this song as well. If you can write lyrics like Eddie does in this song, you will not go very long without a girlfriend.
it's just like when he's like, I'll scream my lungs out until it fills this room. It's just so raw and so good. And again, like in playing this live, when you hear this live, I've never heard it, but like on many bootlegs I've heard it, and it's just, there's very rarely any crowd noise,
because
they're just like, give him the floor, give him everything, and like, you know, we're going to be completely silent for this. So yeah.
Well, let's go through the 12th track, the final track from the record-breaking album, too. It sold nearly a million copies in 5 days.
It did. It just broke a bunch of records and just, yeah, can you imagine that? Just like, you know, nearly a million people.
I was having a look at it for context, and it sold, like 900 and something thousand copies in 5 days. And I think last year's biggest selling album was by Ed Sheeran, which I know you'd have that in the car on the way home.
You know what? He's on my Google playlist.
Oh, there you go. And
you can't work where I work and not get affected. Just before we go on to this.
Yeah.
Ed Sheeran, I would give all props to, because as much as he was on X Factor or all that stuff, like, he is a talented dude.
You can't really have a problem with someone that can. He's writing his own songs, he's singing his own stuff.
I know
using auto tune.
No, and I know some people like sort of like they'll have their reasons for not liking him, but like in a world full of a lot of intolerable crap on the radio, like he's definitely a shining light. So.
Yeah. Well, in last year, I think he sold 2 million physical copies for the entire year, and that was the highest selling.
Yeah.
Album, and these guys sold 900,000 in 5 days.
Yes.
Which I guess is also a bit of an indication of the music industry at the moment too.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, you know, remember those days where people actually went and bought CDs? And,
yeah, when bands were releasing CDs.
Yeah, well, and like, I'm not by any means like, don't think, I do see the use of digital music. I think it's excellent for when you release stuff as a band, a local band. The most expensive thing you can do is like get CDs printed, and then we did a vinyl run for Profiteers, and yeah, it's awesome to have something on vinyl, but it's really expensive, and you have to then charge money in order to just at least break even on that. Well, I see the merit of my thing is, if you release something, if it's on anything and it's just like something that you want people to hear, then, you know, just go for it. Like, if it's digital, if it's record, if it's CD, if it's tape, which is the big thing these days.
I don't have a cassette player anymore.
I think I got one somewhere in the back of my shirt. I've got a few takes from local bands. I'm just, they need to put a download code for this stuff, because true. I can't listen to
it. Well, there are a couple I've seen where it's a cassette, but there's a USB that flips out so you can download the tracks off of there, which is a good idea.
Yeah, but like, I mean, I've seen bands like cruising, like, because you can get them at op shops sometimes. Mm. They got a bunch of old tapes and stuff. So
yeah. I think we're about 6 months away from someone putting out an 8-track EP, on 8-track.
And a reel to reel.
Yeah, wax cylinder. All right, well, Indifference is a gem of a song as well. It's another thing Pearl Jam do well is they start their album strongly, but gee, they finish them well too.
They're this one and Release on from 10, you know, you just maybe not. This is a lot, like, because from Vitology onwards, they started doing some of the weird stuff. So they got Hey Foxy, Mob Dandle, and Mama. But I mean, I think in essence, like, the last song on Vitology is Immortality, which I think Immortality and Indifference can go hand in hand because they're both two of my favorite ending songs. So,
I think there's a lot of pairing between Verses and Vitology. I think there's a lot of parts that mirror the start, the end. There's a few songs in there.
Yeah. You were talking about the link between Daughter and Rearview Mirror just before.
Oh,
like,
yes.
Yeah, so did, like, the shades. So what was it in Daughter that said, like, the shades go down?
The shades go down, which is a bit, they always say, it's a bit of a hint at that domestic violence of pulling down the shades.
Yep.
And then in, Rearview Mirror, it's got the finally the shades are raised part when she saw you in my rearview mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I had never seen that link before and someone mentioned it and it was kind of a mind-blown type moment.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, this is it ends off like one of my favorite albums so well, and I've actually heard this track for a while, so I'm really looking forward to hearing it. So,
yes, yeah. It's a very good one. So we've been going track by track through Pearl Jam's Verses for this 25th anniversary special. This is the last track off the album. Slowly fading out there.
Yeah, be even better now with booms. Like organ and keyboard, the new, their unofficial sixth member of the band.
Yeah, and 12 pretty phenomenal tracks there.
Yeah, as I said at the start of the show, like, one of my favorite albums of all time, not just of Pearl Jam, just the consistent, like, one I can always fall back to, like, out of all the Pearl Jam albums, it would probably go, like, I won't do them all, but the top three would probably be Verses, Riot Act, and Yield. So
I'd be a bit of a mix. It changes every now and again. There are flaws on it, but I do love Vitology. There's tracks I skip.
Yeah. But
I still put it on and go, man, this is good.
Yep.
This one's probably the one that gets played the most over the years. I think I'll go to this one. I like 10, but it does come across sometimes a little bit cheesy, a little bit stadium rock, and
I think there was an alternative Brendan O'Brien mix release close to what Eddie would have wanted like back then, but I really like 10's B-sides. Like, I really like Footsteps and Dirty Frank and Stay Love and Trust and Breathe and that stuff. So,
and again, I'm a big fan of Backspacer. Another one that
their self-titled one, the Avocado one too, has possibly my favourite Pearl Jam song of all time is Inside Job. Of the album is amazing, so yeah.
It's pretty good. And then there's Eddie's ukulele album.
Yeah, I liked his, I didn't like the movie, but I liked his Into the Wild.
That's got some good tracks. At least one of the songs made it onto Backspacer as well.
There's a lot to sort of, and like then you can get into the bootlegs. Like, my brother collected the bootlegs for years.
Yeah.
Because what Pearl Jam did was to go, well, hey, if you want bootlegs, here's high quality ones, and we'll release them, sort of things. So.
And pretty much every gig they play, I've got the Adelaide one.
Yep. I've got the 98 LA one from before. Someone gave me like a thing of that, and I was like, that's amazing. So.
Yeah. All right, well, should we take a listen to Alone?
Yeah, this is probably my favourite B-side.
Yeah, we'll go through this and we probably have just enough time to say see you at the end and maybe go for a sneaky live track while I sort out the studio and lock the doors.
Excellent. All right,
this is Alone. It's one of the B-sides from Verses and you're on High Fidelity.
Lovely.
And that is pretty much midnight. Thanks for hanging out, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
It went quickly too.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, like, I could keep going.
they're getting a break from talking about movies in here.
Yeah. But yeah, have me back next year for do Blue Album and Vitology as well.
I think so. I'm keen to do a couple of 25th anniversary specials, especially with how good some of the 94 releases were as well.
I would have gone on for like, because my favourite NoFX album of all time was White Trash.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I love So Long and Thanks for All the Shoes, which is the hint is on the show's logo. But I've just got so many good memories about that album.
That's got Dad's Bad News on it, hasn't it?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite songs.
Yeah, and the great cover of Champs-Élysées, where they just make up French-sounding words. I'm a big fan of that. But Punk in Drublic, pretty amazing.
That's going to be next year, So then the year after that, I'll be back for An Out on the Walls.
Oh, okay.
That's 22 songs. That's 18 songs, sorry.
Locking them all in. And I think your partner in crime, Dave from Dave's Video Graveyard, is keen to do an Offspring one.
I think he actually wants to do the soundtrack to Top Gun.
Really?
He'll just take you just through that very slowly. It's one of his favourite albums of all time. So,
He does have that tattoo that says he feels the need.
He does. Off air, it's always Goose. And I don't know, I was like, okay, I'll call you Goose, man. It's fine.
My favourite thing, one of my favourite things I saw on Twitter was someone suggesting with the sequel to Top Gun that they're making is that Goose's son should be played by Ryan Gosling. I just read that and went, that guy wins the internet for the day. That was so good.
You can listen to me and Dave on Mondays for Dave's Video Graveyard. You can find Profiteers if you look up Profiteers Band on the interwebs, and also I Had the Peanut Podcast if you want to hear us talk about food.
And all three things definitely worth listening to.
Thank you. And thanks for having me on. This is really, really, really fun.
I had a ball, and I'm always happy when someone wants to hang around for the whole 2 hours because it keeps me awake.
I'll be back.